since the big news this week is President Trump's firing of FBI Director James Comey, we have invited two of our Week in Review regulars, political commentators who are also legal eagles. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network, and we will spend much of, but not all, of this edition of the Week in Review talking about the firing of Comey and what it means for the investigation into Russian interference in the presidential election. We'll talk about the political fallout, and we are going to welcome your reactions and questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So what is your reaction to the firing of James Comey? Do you support or oppose calls for a special prosecutor to take on this this Russia investigation? What do you make of how this story seems to be changing as to how Trump decided to fire Comey? Well, let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us Ed Filone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Rick Essenberg, President and General Counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Ed.
Yeah, and it's good to have you both here. Let me just first get your initial reactions to the firing of FBI Director James Comey. Ed?
Well, I think that the there are three lines of inquiry now, and firing of Comey now creates this third line of inquiry and potential political and legal problems for the Trump administration. This all began with investigations into the role of the Russian government in attempting to influence the U.S. election and the FBI as our domestic national security investigator is investigating those possible actions. But that's also led to investigations of ties and communications between people in the Trump administration or close to Trump and the Russian government, which has led to the second line of inquiry, which is the business dealings between the Trump business empire and Russian investors, Russian individuals with connections to organized crime, and Russian individuals with connections to Russian intelligence. And so the Comey firing really now creates the prospect of a new line of inquiry, which is attempts by the Trump administration, and in particular the president, to foreclose or cut off these other two investigations because perhaps he fears where they might lead. And so really, the firing of Comey is just increasing his own headaches. He's shooting himself in the foot here.
Rick, what do you think?
Well, you know, as with all things that involve Donald Trump, there's sort of an immediate rush to the polar extremes. And on the one hand, I think we have a lot of irresponsible talk about treason and a constitutional crisis. I think that is all unwarranted. There was a counterintelligence investigation underway that may or may not lead to a criminal investigation of certain people. That investigation is going to continue. Acting Director McCabe affirmed yesterday that it would. He said that it's adequately resourced. He said there had been no attempt on the part of anybody in the White House to interfere with it. So it's going to go forward. Jim Comey is a guy who has managed to lose the confidence of both the Democrats and the Republicans, and it turns out that they're both right. His handling of the Clinton email investigation was botched from the beginning, and so there's a sense in which the fact that he's being dismissed now is richly deserved. On the other hand, I do agree with Ed that Trump has shot himself in the foot. Because he seems to be, he seems to take some peculiar umbrage to the fact that this counterintelligence investigation is even going on, that he feels that it undermines him in some way. What he's done is he's made it far more salient and important and raised far more questions about it than would have been the case had he simply allowed it to go forward. And he has, as has been the case on a couple of occasions since he entered the White House, sort of botched the execution of what he's trying to do, in the sense that, you know, there have been there has been an evolving narrative of why it is that Comey was dismissed. And the reasons that were initially given certainly can be reasonably questioned. And so, once again, I think it was a decision that didn't have to be made right now. If he wanted to fire Comey, and I think he could have justified that, he should have done it at the outset of the administration. Not having done it, he shouldn't have done it now. And if he was going to do it, the blocking and tackling certainly could have been pulled off a lot better than it was.
We are talking with Rick Essenberg and Ed Falone during this edition of The Week in Review, talking right now about the firing of FBI Director James Comey, welcoming your questions, your input, your reactions at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Dave in Madison joins us first. Hi, Dave.
Yes, hello. I think the ever-changing rationale of why Jim Comey was fired just smells of a cover-up. If you look at the history of what's gone on, Trump asked for Russian help during his campaign. The intelligence services determined that they were getting, that Russia was damaging Hillary Clinton's campaign. Comey goes in charge of an investigation of the events, and then he's fired after he asks for more support and federal grand juries are impaneled.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. And the story of how Comey was fired is changing. At first, we heard that it was because of Hillary Clinton's emails. And then it was also at the recommendation of the Justice Department. But now, in this interview with NBC yesterday, President Trump was saying, he had decided long ago that and it was his decision, not it wasn't based on the recommendations of the Deputy Attorney General. He also said this when Lester Holt asked him why did he fire Comey. Here's what the president said.
He's a showboat. He's a grandstander. The FBI has been in turmoil. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that. You take a look at the FBI a year ago. It was in virtual turmoil less than a year ago. It hasn't recovered from that.
So, Ed, you first. On our caller thinks that this ever-changing story smells of a cover-up.
Well, can we pause for just half a second to appreciate the irony of Donald Trump calling someone a showboater? I think that, this is the essential problem, and I think this is what Rick is missing here. We had two explanations for why now, in terms of the firing of Jim Comey. The first explanation was it was based on the ineptitude of his handling of the Hillary Clinton email investigation. We know that that is just a ludicrous explanation. You fire someone, 9 months after they commit the event. The second explanation was that the firing was at the recommendation of the Deputy Attorney General, and immediately the Deputy Attorney General said, no, that's not true. You better walk that back. And the Trump administration did. So now we're left hanging out here with no reason for why now. In the meantime, there are three very troubling facts. The first is that Trump himself continues to talk about how he contacted Comey on three occasions to discuss the investigation directly, which is highly inappropriate. The second is that there are well-sourced stories coming out that Trump has been attempting to contact Michael Flynn to talk to him, which, in an ongoing investigation for the president to want to communicate with the subject of the investigation is highly troubling. And then even this morning, Donald Trump tweeted out that Jim Comey better hope that the conversations Trump had with him on the phone were not recorded, which can be read as a veiled threat that if Comey were to leak or testify information about his conversations with the president, that the president might retaliate. So these are things that indicate already highly suspicious, troublesome activity by President Trump in a way that suggests he is concerned about the investigation, he wants to squelch the investigation, and therefore we have a firing with no direct reason or explanation, and all this evidence that Trump is trying to put a kibosh on the investigation. So we are forced to draw our own conclusions.
You want to challenge any of that, Rick?
Well, I mean, I think that the idea that it's ludicrous to think that Comey would be fired for the way that he hired the email investigation is just false. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, Comey somehow managed to make the entire email investigation and the course of the election about him. An FBI director shouldn't have done that. However, I agree that the timing of it undercuts the narrative that that was the reason for the firing, along with some of the things that the White House has said subsequently. So it seems to me reasonable to conclude that Trump decided to do this at least in part because he's annoyed by this counterintelligence investigation, and he's conflating the role of being the president of the United States with the role of being the head of a private corporation where you can sort of demand the type of loyalty and steer the corporate ship in a way that simply doesn't work when you're the president of a democratic republic. And so what I don't challenge, I don't buy into the notion that that this is sort of the crisis or has the level of dark forebodings that Ed might think it has. On the other hand, I think that it was something that was mismanaged by the Trump administration. It's something that is going to lead to the type of suspicions and questions that Ed raises. I don't think those questions are unreasonable. And the most important thing now, and the question in my mind is whether Trump is smart enough to do it, is to allow this counterintelligence investigation to proceed. Now, so far, based upon Acting Director McCabe's testimony yesterday, that's happening, but it better happen, because what Trump succeeded in doing by firing Comey in the way he did was to make this investigation much more prominent than it otherwise would have been.
Rick Essenberg is the President and General Counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, or WILL. And Ed Falone is Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. They are our two guests for this edition of The Week in Review. We'll take some of your calls after this break, reacting to President Trump firing this week the FBI Director James Comey and what happens now. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with the two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in state and national politics. We are spending much of the hour talking about the ouster of FBI Director James Comey and what it means for the investigation into Russian interference in the presidential election. And we will, though, also look at some other issues a little later in the program, including raucous town hall meetings being held by Republican members of Congress, the booing of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos at a graduation ceremony this week, and a public hearing on a bill that would penalize students who disrupt the speech of others on campus. So that's coming up in The Week in Review. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org if you would like to weigh in now on the firing of James Comey. Camille on Facebook writes, he should have been fired the day Trump took office. How the Clinton email scandal was handled was a joke. Well, Ed, what about that?
Well, I think that, you know, Comey was highly criticized by many, and that his handling of the Clinton email investigation was inappropriate. You do have certain standards in the FBI and in federal law enforcement, and one of those standards is that when you are investigating a public official who's running for office, as the election gets closer, the investigation sort of goes into a silent phase because you don't want to interfere with or influence the vote through any public statements or disclosures or actions. And Comey obviously went contrary to that expectation. I've dealt in my legal career with officials from the Public Integrity Office of the FBI, and, you know, that's what they do. Their bread and butter is investigating elected officials. And so Comey's actions went contrary to that. Having said that, whether or not he deviated from those norms, FBI directors are appointed to a 10-year term, and although they are sometimes fired, the standard practice is to let the FBI director stay in office, even if they were not appointed by the president. That's why the 10-year term is there. Presidents obviously at most serve 8 years. The idea is that presidents inherit ex-FBI directors and that those individuals should be left in office to do their job, and it should not be a political appointee, should not be someone self-selected by the president in the normal course. Again, there have been firings of FBI directors over the years. So it's not unusual to say the FBI director goofed. We don't really like the way he handled that email investigation. On the other hand, unless there's a pressing reason, he shouldn't be fired. He should be allowed to serve out his term. And there was no pressing reason for the firing. So I think that that's the troubling thing. And what I'd like to, you know, focus on here is there's going to be an attempt to divert the discussion to let's talk about reflexive anti-Trump hysteria on the left, or let's talk about whether Trump is competent or not competent. But I think the real issue here that we can't lose sight of is the importance of respect for the law enforcement and investigatory function of the FBI and not messing with that. We have institutions, we have norms, and one of the most important ones is you know, to allow the FBI to be an independent investigative body free from political interference. And that's what the Comey firing is sort of calling into question, and I think that's what all Americans need to focus on right now.
Yeah. Do you agree with that, Rick?
Well, to go back to Comey, right, there was a cascading set of problems. First of all, he never should have allowed himself to be put into a position where he was making a decision on whether a prosecution should go forward or not. That is not the role of the FBI. If Loretta Lynch could not have had to recuse herself from the situation, it ought to have been handled by a deputy attorney general. So that was mistake number one. Mistake number two is the legal analysis that he offered was incredibly weak. I've yet to read persuasive legal justification for it. The third problem was, having decided not to prosecute her, he sort of hedged his bet by releasing a statement that was sort of highly critical, as if he was, you know, somehow trying to balance off his very poor legal decision with a very, very sharp political criticism of Hillary Clinton. He had no business doing that. And finally, having committed that original sin, he felt compelled, as a result of his earlier errors, to announce that he was opening up the investigation, you know, in the week before the election. And so as a result of that, he lost the confidence of really both sides of the aisle. You know, it was a very prominent public official who said that Comey had broke with the fundamental principles of the Justice Department and undermined public trust in both the Justice Department and the FBI. The guy that said that was former Attorney General Eric Holder. And so the notion that Jim Comey, the person, should not continue as FBI director doesn't strike me as in and of itself interfering with the independent investigative function of the FBI. I agree, as I said before, that there are problems with respect to the timing and the notion that this was all that went into the decision. That's troubling, and it seems to me that I can agree with Ed this far. The FBI has to be permitted to move forward with this counterintelligence investigation. Once again, Acting Director McCabe has said that this investigation is adequately resourced, it's moving forward, and he committed to inform Congress if anyone attempts to interfere with it, and he ought to do that.
So you, Rick, don't think there should be a special prosecutor appointed to oversee this investigation?
Now, you know, I don't think so. This is sort of a default that we move to too quickly. I think the problem with special prosecutors is a very human one. When you put somebody in charge and you sort of remove them from the normal constraints and you say investigate them, they will do everything that they can to justify their existence. And so, you know, we have the risk of special prosecutors who sort of get out of control and turn what was supposed to be a temporary and limited investigation into sort of an unlimited one. I don't think that we're at the point where we need to have a special prosecutor. But, and this is something that I think President Trump has to understand, he can't make this go away by deciding that he doesn't think it's important. Right? He's not running the Trump Corporation anymore. And so it's going to go forward. And if there is substantial public perception of additional interference with the investigation, he's going to buy himself a special prosecutor. And I think that would be a mistake, both for Trump politically, but I think more importantly for the country.
Ed, should there be a special prosecutor?
Well, I think it's inevitable there will be one. I don't know that right at this moment in time it's clear that one is necessary, but I think it will become inevitable at some point. And I say that for two reasons. First of all, President Trump has demonstrated that he is incapable of keeping his mouth shut and staying out of the topic and not trying to contact people. And I think his tweet that was reported this morning is an example of that. To, you know, after all the controversy of the firing, he tweets out a message that arguably it seems to be intended to intimidate Jim Comey to not leak and to keep quiet. So I think Trump's own actions will eventually lead to a greater call for a special prosecutor, someone who is independent, is appointed by the FBI, works within the Justice Department. I'm sorry, appointed by the Justice Department, works within the Justice Department, but under internal regulations that gives them some degree of independence from the chain of command, although they could still be fired by the president if push came to shove. The second reason why I think it's inevitable is now we have, with Comey's firing, a vacancy. We need a new FBI director. The entire issue of whether there should be a special prosecutor appointed is going to get wrapped up in the confirmation hearings for whoever is appointed. I think the individual appointed, who that person is going to be highly politicized. There's going to be demands that they assure members of Congress and the Senate of their independence. And remember, I hesitate to even bring up Watergate, but it was Elliot Richardson's promise in his confirmation hearings that he would appoint an independent special prosecutor that led to the appointment of Archibald Cox, and then eventually when Cox was fired, the crisis that led to Nixon resigning. So you're going to see a lot of pressure on whoever is put up for FBI director to make promises to Congress. And if those promises, it looks like, are not being kept, the demand for a special prosecutor will only increase.
Let's take some calls. we have many who want to get in on this. Mike in St. Lawrence. Hello, Mike.
Hi. Yeah, just a couple follow-up comments. First of all, it doesn't matter if Cuomo would have been fired in January or fired just last Tuesday. The point is that Donald Trump is just digging his own grave. He comes out and says things that are ridiculous. He appoints or asks or requested from this new Rosenstein, he was on the job for a week, to give him justification to fire Cuomo. And then shortly after that, Rosenstein, I believe, said, well, I'm going to resign. I can't take this. This isn't my fault. I had nothing to do with it. The next day, Trump comes out and gives an interview with the guy from Channel 4, and basically says, no, I made the decision. Takes the pressure off of Rosenstein.
Right.
He just keeps backpedaling and backpedaling and digging and digging and digging. He's got to throw the shovel away or he's done. It may take 6 months or a year, but the man is definitely incompetent.
All right. Thanks very much, Mike. We did discuss those issues already, so I thought you were going to say something else. Let me, what he said he wanted to say was, what about this meeting with the Russian government officials in the Oval Office and the sharing of photos that had occurred and apparently to the surprise and dismay of White House officials? A quick comment on that, Rick?
No, I mean, I think that it's certainly appropriate for, and again, this is a counterintelligence investigation. It may or may not lead to a criminal investigation. There's some indication that it is with respect to Michael Flynn. It is perfectly appropriate, and we have the FBI, and we have the House, and we have the Senate, looking into the role in which, the extent to which, the Russians attempted to influence the election. But one of the things that I find mildly amusing about this is the extent to which interference by the Russians within our political process has tended to be either praised or condemned based upon, whose ox is being gored. So when, Russian hackers were embarrassing the Bush administration, that was a blow in favor of participatory democracy and informing the public. When Russian hackers revealed accurate and authentic but embarrassing emails about Hillary Clinton, that was a threat to the national security in the United States. We have a series of boring stories now being published in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about a Russian hack into the Bradley Foundation. And, there are folks on the left who think that, that this is Pulitzer material. It seems to me that the activities of a foreign entity are an appropriate subject for investigation. The investigation needs to go forward. And to the extent that that the Trump administration is seen to be interfering with that investigation, then I agree with Ed. It will come under increasing political pressure and will run the risk of and perhaps ensure that a special prosecutor will be appointed. I think we've yet to see how this is going to play itself out.
Let me ask you both very briefly to comment on the whole thing where President Trump said that he and Comey had had dinner. It was essentially to talk about whether Comey would stay on as head of the FBI. There's dispute over who called for that dinner meeting. Trump thought Comey did. Sources in the FBI say it was White House. But Trump said Comey told him three times, once at the dinner and twice over the phone, that Trump was not a target of the investigation. And he says he directly asked Comey this. And this is being, what are your thoughts on the, whether that was appropriate or not for the president to ask that, and then the dispute over whether Comey would actually answer that he was not under investigation? Ed?
Well, this was highly inappropriate. You don't contact the person running the investigation and ask them pointed questions about, you know, whether they're looking at you or examining you or if they've made any determinations of your involvement. This is really taking a page from the playbook of Scott Walker. If you recall, during the John Doe investigation, Scott Walker was very fond of repeatedly saying that he had been informed he was not a target of the John Doe investigation, which is essentially a meaningless statement because target is someone that they're decided they're after. What really matters is whether you're a subject of the investigation, which means that if things lead in a certain way, you could be in trouble, but at the moment they haven't followed the evidence to that conclusion. So it's meaningless to say you're not a target because that simply means, well, the investigation's ongoing, but if you're a subject, you could end up becoming a target. So what Trump's trying to do is the same thing Scott Walker tried to do, which is suggest that he's already been cleared when the investigation is still in its early stages. And what's very troubling for Trump is that as you examine the contacts and communications between Russian intelligence officials and individuals in the Trump circle, naturally you're going to look at the financial connections, the business dealings, money connections. And that could be very troubling for Donald Trump because there are many, many reports of extensive Russian investment in Trump real estate holdings. And that really could be the thing that Donald Trump is the most worried about.
Mm-hmm. Rick?
Well, I think that for a person who is the subject of an investigation, knowing that they are not a target of the investigation is not meaningless or irrelevant to them. And in fact, they ask all the time. And in fact, it's not unusual for them to be told that they're not. Now, that's no guarantee that the evidence might turn in a different direction. But particularly when you're a public official, like Donald Trump and Scott Walker, when there is an investigation that is going on, like the John Doe, or going on like this Russian counterintelligence investigation, there is a tendency for people to make political misuse of those investigations and to suggest that the fact that the investigation is ongoing means that there must be probable cause or reasonable suspicion or substantial evidence that that person has committed a crime. And so it's not unusual and it's not meaningless for there to be drawn a distinction between the subject of the investigation and whether someone is a target. So I don't find there is, I think, this additional uncomfortable aspect to it, because normally in a criminal investigation or in an investigation which is a counterintelligence investigation or some other form of investigation, persons who are the subject in the investigation don't have the ability to fire the investigator. And so this makes it a little bit more uncomfortable and suggests that perhaps it would have been better for Donald Trump not to ask the question. But the fact that the question was asked and the question was answered, I don't think is unusual at all.
Well, I just
and it's not meaningless. The answer is not meaningless.
I don't want us to get caught up on the legal distinction between a target and a subject, but as someone who spend a lot of time representing subjects of federal grand jury investigations, when your client is a subject, you are very, very cautious and you are very aware that they could be in the crosshairs of the government. And that is not in any way an exoneration to be told you're just a subject.
Let me take some... go ahead, very briefly, Rick, but we're almost at break time. All right.
No, I mean,
go ahead, Rick.
I'm sorry, Joe, go ahead.
I'm going to take another call. I guess I'm not. Let's go to Maureen in Baraboo. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. I'm just wondering if either of your guests find the paucity of Republican leadership in the Senate and House rather appalling, that more Republicans have not stood up to say this has to continue and this investigation has to be seen through to the end.
Yeah. Well, just by the way, Wisconsin's 8th District Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher did put out a series of tweets on Wednesday morning saying that he has serious concerns and unanswered questions about the timing of Comey's firing. He also said he also called for the congressional and FBI investigations into Russian interference into the election to continue unimpeded and unaltered. So at least there's one Republican in our congressional delegation that reacted that way. Rick, I'm sorry, we were having trouble hearing each other over the telephone. Your reaction to that and Maureen saying that more Republicans should be concerned?
Well, yeah, I'm out of state in a conference, and so I have not had an opportunity to sort of go down the list and see who's saying what about this. I am aware generally that, you know, there have been, you know, some Republicans, in addition to Representative Gallagher, I think Senator Burr from North Carolina, I can't name the others, who have, you know, indicated some, you know, concern about this, have asked that a full accounting be given, the full accounting should be given, and, you know, to the extent that there is something to investigate, and I think at this point it is appropriate to investigate Russian activity in the election, that investigation should go forward.
Let's take Peter in Madison next. Hi, Peter.
I feel like the Democrats are putting way too much emphasis on the whole Russia Comey angle. I feel like the way that the Democrats need to focus on beating Trump is by talking about health care and talking about how he wants to do tax cuts for the rich and about how that money really could go to benefit the public and getting out of conflicts like in Afghanistan.
All right, thanks, Peter. So don't get hung up on Comey and Russia. Peter says move on to, you know, health care and the like.
Well, I will agree with the caller to a certain extent, which is that you do see on the left some calls for impeachment or you know, that sort of a tactic, and you know, those are impeachments, a political process, not a legal one. And I think it's you know, far more effective if you want to retake political power to focus on issues that are important to people in this country, and not to try and use this investigation as a cure-all to win elections. All right, I agree with that part. However, this investigation does go to a very well-known and established Russian operation to use internet communications and social media and other electronic means to influence elections in ways that Russia sees to its benefit and to the detriment of the United States. And that is a national security risk. And so we cannot forget that this is out there, and we need to know more about it, and we need to know what, if any, role it is playing in the past and might play in the future. And so, yes, political issues, domestic issues are real important for winning elections, but there is a very real national security issue that needs to be investigated.
Yeah, Ed brought it up, or touched on it anyway. Some Democrats, including Wisconsin's 2nd District Congressman Mark Bocan, say that they are getting closer to impeaching President Trump. Bocan said that House Democrats need to use the impeachment threat as a tool to make the administration follow the law. Quick react to that, Rick?
You know, he can say that, and I think that, you know, his base will eat that up. But I think that that's totally disassociated with what is likely to happen in the real world at this time. So, you know, I don't think that we are at the verge of impeachment. I think that the caller has a point in that I think the people who are, and I agree with Ed that the investigation needs to go forward, as I said before on a number of occasions. But I think we have a tendency, particularly people who are highly interested in politics, to believe that if we show that a politician is a scoundrel or has done something that is in some sense dishonest, that we somehow have wounded them grievously with the election, with the electorate. And the problem is, I think a lot of voters sort of expect that of politicians. They think they're all scoundrels, and they think they're all dishonest, and so they substantially discount this stuff. And so I don't know if this is going to have political legs, particularly given that the average voter knows that both the Democrats and the Republicans seem to have lost confidence in Comey. I think that something else is going to have to happen before this becomes really politically salient, that the Trump administration is going to have to interfere in some other way with the investigation, or there's going to have to be some evidence that emerges that there was a more substantial and real connection between the Trump campaign and this activity on the part of the Russians that we've been, you know, we've seen so far.
Rick Essenberg is president and general counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Ed Filone is an associate professor of law at Marquette University. They are our two guests for this edition of The Week in Review. We're going to have to move on from the Comey issue because there are a few other things we need to discuss. There will be more on the firing of FBI Director James Comey in the Week in the News on Point after 9 o'clock. We're also planning on talking about the very latest developments on Monday morning from 6 until 7. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review.
Thank you so very, very much for this great honor and privilege. I am honored to become a Wildcat.
And that was Education Secretary Betsy DeVos getting booed and jeered as she gave the commencement address at a historically black university in Florida on Wednesday. Some students petitioned the school to cancel DeVos's address because of her now recanted statement that the founders of historically black colleges and universities were real pioneers of school choice. Your reaction, Ed, to Betsy DeVos getting booed and the university essentially telling the students to be quiet or they'd get their diplomas mailed to them?
Well, it was free speech all around. I mean, victory for the First Amendment. Betsy DeVos got to give a speech, and the students got to express their views through expressive conduct, and it was free speech all around. I think what's very troubling is something like this bill in the Wisconsin legislature that would try to create a more formal means of punishing expressions of disapproval, which would, you know, obviously be unconstitutional both in its intent and also in its application. This idea that, conservative speakers should be invited more often and that students should sit quietly and put up with it, the students have a First Amendment right to. So.
Yeah, there is a Republican bill that would let Wisconsin's universities punish students, discipline students who disrupt speeches of others. It got its first public hearing yesterday. The measure calls for the UW system to suspend or expel students who engage in disorderly conduct that interferes with the free expression of others. Supporters say that this bill will impinge on students' rights to disagree with speakers, and the supporters say that this allows conservatives free speech rights, which are often infringed. Your thoughts, Rick, on this bill, and is what happened to Betsy DeVos a reason for it?
Well, my organization is going to put out a paper on the various legislative proposals either today or early next week. My view is that, and I certainly hope Ed isn't suggesting, that there's some type of First Amendment right to shout down or physically obstruct the expression of an idea. I think the law is well established that it is permissible to make reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions that will prohibit that from happening, that will allow everyone to have their say. Now, having said that, I don't think that that's what happened at Bethune-Cookman, because I don't think that the booing that occurred during the DeVos speech rose to the level of a shout down or an obstruction of her ability to be heard. She had an opportunity to say what she wanted to say. With respect to the legislative proposals that are pending, I think that there are certain aspects of those proposals that are not well crafted. There are a couple of provisions in them that I think are unconstitutional in that they do not adequately protect the right of people to protest. There are others that, while I think they have been mischaracterized by critics of the bill, are nevertheless, I think, problematic such that they need to be redrafted to better ensure that the right of protesters will be respected and not deterred. And so, I think that it's perfectly appropriate for the legislature to say that if we're going to have the free expression and we're going to have, which is necessary to the sifting and winnowing that has been part of the mission of the University of Wisconsin, we have to allow people to speak. But I don't think that in doing that, we should impair the ability of others to then speak in opposition to whatever message that those people have conveyed, and to protest appropriately their, you know, their.
Yeah, I look forward to debating Rick now about his concession that it's proper to regulate campaign contributions to level the playing field so that both sides can have their voice heard equally. Once you go down that road, I don't think you can be so selective on what kind of speech can be regulated. And I think the main problem with this bill in Madison is that the language obviously can be selectively applied when it talks about unreasonably loud. Well, of course, that's going to be selectively applied. Or boisterous. What is boisterous? Who decides what's boisterous? That's going to be selectively applied. It's plainly an unconstitutional bill on its face by its own language.
All right, let's take a Nate in Milwaukee has a comment on this. Hi, Nate.
Hi. I was just going to say it's been an interesting change from a few years ago when Republicans were trying to limit the free speech of the Solidarity singers to see them now attempt to protect the speech of those they see as their political allies. And I thought that was an excellent point about money and politics.
All right. Thanks, Nate. Jerry in Brookfield. Hi, Jerry.
Wanted to concur with that money and politics, but my comment was simply this shouldn't be too complicated. If they're going to allow anybody to applaud when somebody is speaking, no matter which side he is, then they ought to at least allow people to not necessarily boo, but I mean express disagreement. I don't know how they can just nitpick away that, well, we can't allow boisterousness and so on and so forth. No, there was boisterousness throughout our whole inception of our nation when we were trying to form a government, and I think it should continue.
All right. Rick, briefly, concluding remarks on that?
Well, as I said, I think that the language in both of these bills in our paper will point out, and it will focus on the language that talks about unreasonably loud or boisterous. That language is too vague, it's overly broad, and it needs to be removed from the bill and replaced with something which is more narrowly crafted and constitutionally permissible. And to say that this is like, you know, campaign finance, we don't have time to get into that, but I disagree with that. I think that we need to at all times create a situation in which we can have more speech. I think that restricting what people can, using their resources to speak, is unconstitutional, and I think that it is appropriate for the university to ensure that everyone can speak, and shutting down speakers and physically obstructing access to an event and attacking the speakers physically is not constitutionally protected activity. If Ed thinks it is, I would be delighted to debate him on that.
All right. So, Ed, you get last word, but only 20 seconds worth.
Well, this is getting ridiculous. This is not about speech. This is about power. This is about forcing the UW system to invite conservative speakers and forcing UW students to listen to them. There's plenty of ways to use public disturbance laws, all the various laws on the books about, people being disruptive or committing assault. Those laws are plenty. We don't need to go into this through the free speech door.
Thank you both very much for being with us, Ed Filone and Rick Essenberg. We will have more on the firing of FBI Director Jim Comey coming up on Monday between 6 and 7 a.m. And in our state capitol report, we're going to follow up on the state Republicans holding their annual convention today, tomorrow, and Sunday. Thank you to Bill Martins for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.